Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is a podcast edition of Technogaze on Joy 94.9. In Melbourne, you can tune in on Monday night, 7 p.m. on 94.9 FM or online at joy.org.au/listen live. For more information, visit joy.org.au.
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, melt, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it.
Hello and welcome to Technogaze, the show where we look into the past, observe the present, and gaze into the future of technology. You're here tonight with myself, Brendan Law, and also in the studio tonight we have regular correspondent, Mark Powney.
Hello.
And new person, Jason Shaw.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. Right, tonight's show is jam-packed with excitement. We've got internet memes, and those are kind of like things that happen on the internet that which become really popular. And first of all, we'll be discussing humorous things on the internet, followed by time-wasting things on the internet, which you commonly get via work email.
Yes.
And also internet fame, so people who have become famous due to the internet. Mm. And then we'll have a discussion on Wolfram Alpha, which is a new search engine, which has just been released, which is very cool. And finally, the impact of viral campaigns and forwarded emails on company time and expense. Jason will be taking us through that.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, some funny things to look up on the internet. So if you did get a bit bored tonight, you can flick open the computer and have a look. Anyway, do we have some news?
Yeah, first off to some news.
All right, so in a surprise move, Microsoft have decided to suddenly cut MSN access to countries embargoed by the US.
Oh.
This only just happened in the last couple of days, for no particular reason that anybody can fathom. The countries are North Korea, Cuba, Syria, Iran, and Sudan.
Hmm.
Many of the countries' sanctions date back over 8 years. Well, many of the sanctions for those countries date back over 8 years, and it's unclear where Microsoft have chosen to do it.
To do it now?
Yeah.
Maybe there's some influence from the... from the government Obama, over there, or
Obama administration, possibly.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the next item, a security researcher recently posted code on the internet to show people how to exploit a Java-based flaw in Apple's OS X operating system. But in a strange twist, his intention was not to be malicious. He simply wanted to highlight the fact that Apple had been very, very slow at actually providing the patch.
Right.
Out to customers. So, and Sun had actually fixed this about 5 months earlier. So, shortly after the exploit was made or found and made public, you know, they're recommending people disable Java in their browser. So, and Apple say that the full patch is on the way, quote unquote.
Right. So, do we think this is kind of like the first step in a full scale, you know, attack on Apple computers?
Yeah, I mean, we could be skeptical, but I think the Apple fans out there will be pretty staunch.
I would be surprised myself. I think it's. There's not enough Java use out there for it to really make a difference, but that's just me. So, Sun, in another blow to Apple, I guess, Sun, who were recently acquired by Oracle and who own these trademarks and specifications for the well-known Java platform, have announced they're looking to create an app store of their very own for the Java platform. They have reportedly looked at Apple's model of the iPhone app store and massaged it to one that would be based on the Java software platform. Well, figures from Apple suggest there are 21 million iPhones and iPod Touches out as potential customers. Sun estimate there are 1 billion users of the Java platform, making up a potential customer for their app store.
Ah, Java's just horrible, though.
It's horrible to use, yeah. I mean, that is a massive market if those numbers are correct. I mean,
yeah, I'd say it's based on how many people are actually have the Java runtime installed. Yep.
Mm. Yeah. And have it updating every 5 seconds when their computer pops up and says, update the Java platform.
Just like a Windows update, but anyway.
It's not quite so annoying. So, you remember I've been talking about the Pirate Bay trial happening in Sweden?
It finished
a while ago, and then I kind of reported on the fact that there might be a mistrial because the judge was involved in copyright scandals. So, they signed another judge to investigate whether the original judge was biased in the trial, but he's also been kicked off. Well, actually, she's been kicked off because she's biased as well. The judge was assigned to investigate whether the original trial was invalid due to the original judge being a member of industry copy protection groups. Mm. But the new judge has been removed from the case due to allegations that she was also a member of the same groups.
Right. So who chose her to put on,
imagine the job description, number one.
Must be a leader of the Record Industry Association.
Unbiased, please. Yes. That's very strange.
Hmm. And Twitter reached a new milestone recently with a NASA astronaut sending the first tweet from space. And the tweet was sent during the mission to repair the Hubble telescope, which was interesting. And it said, from orbit, launch was awesome. I'm feeling great, working hard and enjoying the magnificent views. The adventure of a lifetime has begun.
You'd think it'd be a bit more grandiose than that, like, you know, one small step for, I don't know, tweets.
That's what I thought.
One small tweet from space.
You thought it'd be scripted for about 3 years, you know, this thing.
So. And then you'd stuff it up anyway.
That's right.
So, Graham Samuel, the head of Australia's Competition and Consumer Commission, has given the government's plans for a national broadband network a big tick of approval late last week. In a speech last Thursday, he described the proposed $43 billion network as, and I quote, the most momentous policy initiative in the Australian telecommunications sector since the introduction of full competition over a decade ago. Of course, the opposition have not taken too kindly to this, and they have hit out at Samuel, saying, quote, Mr. Samuel is a regulator, not a telecommunications expert. Which, to me, is a bit odd, because, you know, the ACCC has been involved in, you know, the telecommunications industry over the past decade, what with the likes of Telstra, you know, using their competitive advantage to, well, more than advantage. In the same speech, though, Samuel also endorsed the proposed breakup of Telstra, where the retail side will be separated from the wholesale side. This point wasn't so heavily criticised, as, of course, the only group that would lose out from this is, if anyone at all, is of course, Telstra. Mm. So there we have it.
Mm. Very interesting. Mm. Well, you're listening to Joy, 94.9. This is TechnoGaze. Don't forget that you can email us in. We like emails. Email us in on onair@joy.org.au, or you can text us on 0427JOY949, and you can follow us on Twitter as well. That's twitter.com/technogaze.
Joy 94.9, Radio Chic.
You're listening to TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9, and next up we have a discussion on internet memes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for those who may not be aware of what a meme is, what is a meme exactly?
Well, a meme is essentially something that's popular, been made popular by the internet, or internet memes in particular, but a meme actually has roots in just sociology itself.
Right.
And it can get passed around like a game or a saying or something that gets passed around through the population, essentially.
Not necessarily mass advertised as such, but more through your social networking and those kind of things.
Indeed. It's popular because it's popular. It's not popular because
it's a cultural thing.
Yeah.
Right, so have we got some examples of some internet memes?
Sure do. First of all, I'd like to passiveaggressivenotes.com is one of my favourites, and I like going to that website and having a look at some of the pictures they've got. So they take kind of pictures of notes that appear on that people appear put up in the office, like, you know, right, please clean the toilet, or you know, there's a toilet brush there just for you, or you know, this is my cheese, if you eat it, I will, you know. Something.
All right, so is it actually based on real life signs?
Real notes.
People take photos and
notes,
post
that
them
people
up
have been left. Yeah.
Is it often updated? Like, is there?
It's just like Failblog or any of the other ones.
Right.
Updated all the time.
Right. Mm. Of course, there's another one that I'm very familiar with, and I'm just going to play a little portion of this because I really like it. It's called the Hamster Dance, which you may remember from
many
years and years ago. Here we go. Now I could put that on repeat there because it has a habit of being put on repeat when you go to the site.
Yes,
yes,
like
brings back memories.
Yes, actually my favourite one that's been put on repeat is the Badger Badger Badger. Have you got that one?
I actually do. Funny you should mention that. Where is that one? Here it is.
So this is a website you go to. It loads up a flash animation. And it just constantly plays this track in the background, and it's just... it's really funny, because you can tell your friends, you got to watch it right to the end, though.
Yeah.
Have you seen it right to the end?
Oh, my God, it's so cool. The snake makes an appearance, doesn't it? The snake makes an appearance.
Yeah, but it's not the end. It keeps going round and round and round.
It's one of those things. It's cute little badgers that sit and dance on the screen, isn't it?
One thing I forgot about... another good one is the llama dance.
Ah, yes.
Or the llama song. Yeah. That's so good.
So... I guess there's been some other memes that have come up over the years. Red versus Blue. Have you heard of that one? Where there's some footage that's sourced from the game Halo Combat Evolved, and it's actually like a TV series or a mini series of movies where it's a storyline that's a civil war being fought in the in a desolate box canyon, and basically they acted all out. On the game itself,
the console,
you can see people actually walking around and talking to each other, and then this is just in a sort of a first person shooter gameplay type situation, and they put voiceovers over the top to make it make sense, and so hilarious are the type of things that's
quite funny.
They have included in that. What other memes Jason, have you?
Yeah, I mean, you could call internet fame, I guess, a type of meme.
Yeah,
I mean, when you think of internet fame, you think of, you know, all those emails that you forward around to all of your friends and things like that. And, you know, some examples, I mean, you could call it your 15 minutes of YouTube, even. and, you know, people like Perez Hilton, who many will know, who's a controversial gossip monger online, and you know he makes his fame out of, you know, basically commenting on stars' photographs, you know, humorous commentary and you know, captions and things like that. But you know, he's taken that fame and actually, you know, taken it to TV as well. He's a media source. He's quoted in media now, which is quite incredible.
He's made it big, hasn't he? Are there any other sort of 15-minute fame type?
Well, I mean, the classic, I think, you'd have to live on the moon if you hadn't heard of Susan Boyle. she was the Scottish singer who appeared on Britain's Got Talent.
Right.
And you could tell when she walked out, you know, I think this video has been viewed, you know, hundreds of millions of times. When she walked out on stage, the look on the judges' faces was just this, you know, horror, you know. Who was this? You know, you could tell they were being very judgmental about her, you know, unflattering appearance, I should say. But, you know, her performance was incredible and... I think they really struck a chord with viewers and also with Simon Cowell, amazingly. And it was very much a rag-to-riches story. And so, you know, it shows that, you know, you don't have to be glamorous to be famous.
It's funny, that one, actually, because I don't really pay much attention to the Idol shows around, but I have watched one of those YouTube clips of her. It was quite impressive.
She was very impressive, yeah.
Yeah. Typical.
Speaking of Idol, I believe we've got another video of Bulgarian Idol. And if you haven't seen this one, it's just hilarious.
Yes.
This is a woman singing Mariah Carey, and I think we'll just fast forward a little bit, maybe.
We'll skip right in.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
So, for the benefit of the listener, Brendan was just doing a karaoke impression there. Now, what is it that makes this one particularly famous? Because it's not really obvious from the audio, is it? It's
that she obviously doesn't have a fantastic grasp on the English language. She feels the need to actually, like, this is the single. Let's turn this up a little bit.
So, of course, that was supposed to be in English, wasn't it?
Supposed to be English, yeah. She's supposed to be singing Mariah Carey's track. What's it called?
I think we'll need to put that out to the listener. If you know the name of that track that she was singing.
Well, they mentioned it earlier, but... She calls it Kenley.
Yeah.
And she just kind of makes up the other words from what she thinks she hears. Mm. So it's kind of funny.
I think most of the humor is actually in the subtitles on that video. So.
You have to watch the video. Google it, I'd suggest. It's on YouTube. Mm. It's everywhere.
What would they need to look up to Google that one?
I'd suggest Bulgarian Idol.
Bulgarian Idol. Excellent. A couple other... I guess some others that you might have heard of is Will It Blend? The site that has I think they're YouTube videos or videos in anyway that show whether something is blendable or not, and I think to my absolute horror an iPhone was tested out and
I had to sit back and watch that one a couple of times.
Are they really doing that to that $800 piece of art?
And this was just after all the media had come out to say that people just couldn't get their hands on this device, you know, and it was all sold out across the world, and here's this guy on the internet blending one up.
I wonder how much advertising dollars he made from that. Because that's another point, isn't it? That a lot of these memes or internet clips or whatever, they do actually have some, or some of them are commercially based, aren't they?
That's right, yeah. I mean, there's a very, very strong science in internet marketing that goes, you know, that follow these things. Mm. It's entertainment, but there is actually a bottom line. And, you know, you can make, you know, dollars off internet advertising, for instance. Or, you know, email advertising, things like that. But, I mean, even in the case of Susan Boyle, there's actually a darker side to it as well, in that the producers of Britain's Got Talent knew exactly how this was going to play out online, and they actually gambled, you know, with her image, basically. You know, put that out for public humiliation just to increase media sales, and it turned out to be a real success, but they would have known exactly how that was going to play out.
Mm. Interesting.
I guess another example of commercialism in internet viral campaigns is the Subservient Chicken. That was an advertising campaign that was done by Burger King. And it was actually a webcam that was focused on a man in a chicken suit. And the man would then respond to actions that were given to it through a little text box below the webcam. So the idea was it was actually a responding directly to whatever it was that was being typed in. Of course, there were thousands and thousands of people being on there and entering stuff in, so you couldn't imagine just one person doing that. And what it turned out to be was actually 50-odd clips of different activities that would respond to certain keywords in the text box. Mm. But it's very effective because people would go on there and say, you know, do the Michael Jackson moonwalk, for example, and it would go ahead and do it. And so they thought they were actually in complete control of this thing. And so that was that's one example of commercialism.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Although some of commercial companies do make some of the best kind of viral ad commands, like the Sony Bravia one. With the paint.
The exploding paint.
Yeah, that was really cool. And have you seen the Ford Focus one where it flips the bird? Like the bird lands on the bonnet?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
I've seen another one which is not so pleasant, but it's got a cat that gets up on a car. I can't remember which brand it was. It might have been BMW or something. But apparently it was a mock-up ad that had been done by an agency.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't supposed to be released on air or anything.
Yeah.
But it was actually of this cat that would get up on the car.
Yeah.
Of course, the car doesn't like cats being on it, so the cat's sticking its head in the sunroof, and the sunroof starts closing and literally goes all the way, and you see a bit of unfortunate but that one leads me to I guess a happier note on the cat scene, and that is of course the lolcat phenomenon, which
legendary.
Yes, it's all over the internet. There's I guess three different how many different sites would there be out there that
it's probably about half a dozen or
yeah
so. Yeah at least
yeah so the Wildcats is basically where people submit their own photographs of cats, and they put little captions underneath it, which in itself can be funny, you know, depending on what the caption is. But the other thing that they do is actually turn it into lol speak, so it's sort of cutesy juvenile type but very self absorbed language that they use up on the caption. So it's one to keep an eye out for if you're ever bored and you want
you like cats
a bit of a laugh. And the whole thing is it's called lol cats because you laugh out loud at the cats. And of course, the site is built so that they get moderated and popularized by people voting for them. So you can always go to a site. The site that I often frequent is called icanhascheeseburger.com, which is a reference to the first ever lolcat photo that was submitted to the site. But yeah, definitely go to that site, and you'll find plenty of
excellent.
There, and in fact, the spelling of that is a bit odd. So we'll make sure we put all
put all the links on the blog. So you don't need to write down furiously what we're spelling out here. you can check the blog later on. The lolcats came from another type of phenomenon, didn't they? Wasn't there a particular?
There was a picture or a photo that was put up there called "Every Time You Masturbate, God Kills a Kitten." How many more have to die? And that was the first caption that was prior to it being a lolcat
with a really cute little kitten.
Yeah, and it's like pouting or doing an almost dog face up to the camera, and the poor thing, you know, I don't know, Grim Reaper behind it or something.
That's great.
This is Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9. Coming up next, we'll be discussing Wolfram Alpha, which is a recent new search engine. So stay tuned. You can always contact us, can't you, Brendan?
Yes, you can. You can get us on email at onair@joy.org.au, SMS us on 0427JOY949, or get us on Twitter.
TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9, and you may have heard of a recent new search engine called Wolfram Alpha, which is a search engine that is based on... it's actually the brainchild of a guy by the name of Stephen Wolfram. It sources its information from data that is known to be factual. So compared to, say, the likes of Google, where it's really just sourcing information from the internet, this is from known sources that have been verified as being factual. But the key to it is that it accepts natural language as input. So... It you can enter in a question, might be the population of Melbourne or something like that, and it will come back with a response. So the other thing about it is its results. The results are actually presented in a dynamic fashion. So you can when you type in the population of Melbourne, if it has the information available to it, it will present you with graphs, historical information over time, that sort of thing. Say if you're looking up the weather, the results will be in charts and that sort of thing as well. And an example that they have up on the site is if you look up the location of the International Space Station, a flattened map of Earth is displayed with the course of the ISS and its current location. So it's quite a nifty tool. It sort of brings everything together where, I guess, Google, you might just see text on a screen as a result in Wolfram Alpha. It's a bit more sort of contextual there.
So, as you were saying, Google brings back pages of information that people have typed, whereas Wolfram Alpha actually does the calculations in the background.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess because one of the things that first came up when it was released was it was compared to Google and sort of said, oh, this is the next Google, and those those kind of statements, which were a bit not so accurate, I'd say, after a bit of analysis. Yeah. So the fundamentals of it, there's actually a system that it's based on called Mathematica. And it's a platform described as a symbolic language upon which all the querying and behind-the-scenes analysis is based. It includes a vast array of algorithms and that sort of thing, which make up the totality of the results. Mm. And that's actually 20 years of research and development have gone into that.
And they store the results. I think they've got a huge database of all of these facts and figures, which is, I guess, one of the differences with Google, is that Google goes out there and kind of gives you suggestions about what the answer may be to your query. Whereas, the Wolfram Alpha solution is it gives you the answer or answers that are very, very close or, kind of factually correct to what you're looking for.
It also displays a source for that information as well, doesn't it? So it's considered more reliable, I guess, than the likes of Google, because it's really just you know, time-based on Google.
I don't know whether I call it reliable in terms of, you know, at least with Google, you know that the information you're getting is based on someone's opinion. You're actually looking at the website that you're going to, and you can, you know, judge the, you know, accuracy of what you're looking at based on what kind of website it's on. Whereas with Willframe Alpha, you it's all presented within that Willframe sort of Chrome, I'd say. And so you're kind of trusting Willframe itself rather than the page you're looking at.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's about trust, isn't it? Sort of Google kind of just says, okay, this is what's out on the internet, but Willframe Alpha is sort of saying, well, we've verified this as being correct.
Yeah, but who's we? That's the thing.
Oh, these experts, quote unquote, you know, that kind of toted behind the driving of this thing.
The people who've spent 20 years of research and development on Mathematica. So another comparison to Google is the fact the terms of service is quite different, where Google actually, you know, pretty much say, okay, what you see is what you get, and you can use it as you will. Whereas on Willframe Alpha, if you use the information in other publications that you get from Willframe Alpha, then you actually have to attribute it back to Willframe Alpha, which is an interesting point of view, because that means that if you reference them, even though the information is coming from, say, NASA with the ISS story, you still have to attribute it back to Willframe Alpha, which is a sort of a new way of interpreting copyright, I guess.
That's right. And I think that the only way they can do that is if they, you know, say that they own the data. And I think that's the difference between Google and Willframe, is that Willframe will store the data as theirs, and you're accessing their data, which has been, you know, curated by, you know, 5,000 experts over 20 years. And I think that's probably, you know, what's going to be the commercial difference between Google. Hopefully try and make money off it, I assume.
Yeah, one of the other things that comes from that is the concept of deep linking into Willframe Alpha. It actually means that if you do that, I mean, you can do that quite happily with Google, and they don't really care. You know, they're quite happy for you to point them at their site. But you may actually, with Willframe Alpha, because of the way the terms of service are written, you may be, in fact, facilitating your users to break their terms of service. And as a consequence, under US law anyway, you may be held liable for that. So it's something to be careful of when you're using those kind of things. It's not always the same terms and conditions that you would expect from others like Google.
I wonder how they take ownership of the answer for 2 + 2.
Well, it's just as long as if they're displaying the information, then
that's right.
Yeah. If you needed to use Willframe Alpha to find the information for 2 + 2, then you should definitely quote the fact that you had to use Willframe Alpha.
I didn't look that up today, honest.
One of the other things that came out of it, and of course people were quick to get onto this and start trialing it out, going back to our lighter side of the internet theme that we've got happening tonight, there are a couple of Easter eggs that you might want to try when you go to the site. Of course, the web address for it is wolframalpha.com, and you can enter in there what is the speed of an unladened African swallow, which, of course, is a reference to Monty Python's Holy Grail, where a bridge keeper asks King Arthur that particular question. King Arthur's response is duly referenced by Willframe Alpha when it references or displays the answer. Some very simple ones. If you type in hello, then the response is hello human.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you can actually keep that conversation going. So you can ask questions like, can you help me? Where are you? And what are you? And there's equally clever responses that come back from it as well. And one that I quite like is if you enter in, how many roads must a man walk down before you can call him a man? The answer, of course, is duly attributed to Bob Dylan. Quite nice. Are there any others that...
Yeah, what is the answer to life, the universe and everything? Comes back with 42.
42,
of course.
And it is attributed to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
There are quite a few Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy references in there, I think.
I found one today.
Pop media.
Why did the chicken cross the road? And it says to get to the other side, of course. So.
Is that the real reason, though? Chicken or egg?
You're listening to Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9.
This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9, and next up we have a quick discussion on viral campaigns and forwarded emails and the impact that they have on workplace, I guess, you know, how much time you spend on that.
That's right, and who's actually going to own up to how much time they actually spend doing it? I think, you know, it's one of those things you get sent an email and, you know, you open it and you think it's funny and you want to forward it around to all your friends. And, you know, it's a potential, you know, time waster. And, you know, according to researchers actually at University of Melbourne, workers are actually more productive when they're able to do, you know, the occasional non-work thing online during the day. And Dr. Brent Coker studied the habits of 300 workers and found that, you know, the large majority surf the internet for personal reasons, actually, at work. You know, but despite the perception by employers that this is a drain on employees, Coker said that these employees are actually able to focus better at work.
So it's a bit like a mental break, I guess, isn't it? You can kind of get up and stretch your legs if you want to.
That's right.
You can also get up and go to a website or something and stretch your mind.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, I mean, if you want to take a 5-minute break, you know, it's probably quicker to go online, have a look at something funny, play a bit of Sudoku or something like that, than it is to actually leave the building, you know, go have a cigarette or something like that and come back. And
Or do both.
That's right.
It's a cigarette break 2.0, I think is the term that was coined.
Exactly. Oh, really? That's right.
By a previous presenter, you know, I think it was last week. Thank you, Troy, to that particular one.
And there's this big problem, I guess, for companies, you know, because the cost to actually put in mechanisms to monitor staff and to put in, you know, blockers, you know, blocking social networking sites and things like this, it can be quite expensive. Mm. And what the research is showing is that, you know, actually this money may not, you know, going down a black hole. It could actually, you know, outweigh any benefits. Mm. And so also, you know, employees can also, you know, feel watched at work, which I guess is, you know, pretty uncomfortable for a lot of people to think that they're being monitored 24 hours a day.
A bit demoralising if you think you're...
Yeah, it's a trust question, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, a 3-second update on Twitter is probably going to save them, you know, 10 minutes of, you know, having to walk out of the office, take a, you know, walk down the street and a bit of fresh air.
Right.
You know, personally, you know, my personal experience is that, you know, I love just getting on Facebook and just, you know, bashing out a quick, you know, status update and then getting back to what I was doing.
Venting on
out
to the public if that's what you're doing, or just saying what you do.
That's right. Yeah, I guess there are kind of unwritten guidelines as to, you know, Facebook status updates about your employer.
Yes, yeah. Which we did discuss last episode.
That's right.
And you can go onto the podcast and download it if you wish, which is on joy.org.au/technogaze.
Mm.
Anyway, bit of self promotion there. What else is there about?
Yeah, well, it's funny. A lot of the research, you know, talks about you know, productivity from the employee's point of view, but there didn't seem to be a lot of commentary about, you know, how much people take home from work and do at home. Mm. You know, I think, you know, when it comes down to it, there's probably a very good balance between work and, you know, home life. You know, people may, you know, take an hour off work early and, you know, take that work home and work for another 2 hours. So I think in balance, you know, decent hardworking people are probably decent hardworking people, you know. Mm. And I think, you know, people should question that, or employers should be too worried about that.
If you hired a lemon, then you're going to get a lemon no matter what.
That's right.
It doesn't matter how much time they actually spend doing things.
No, that's right. But, I mean, it's not even the productivity issues that face business. It's more the security issues of, you know, things like flash games and, you know, email viruses and things like this. And, you know, for businesses, this is a huge security risk. And it's why a lot of money is being put into, you know, proper email filters and things like that. Because, I mean, for instance, if a virus got loose, you know, on a corporate network, and, you know, how many hundreds of thousands of customer, you know, bits of information are sitting on that network, you know, the risk and the exposure to that organization is huge if something actually gets loose.
And it might be a virus that's disguised as a, you know, flash game or something.
Absolutely.
And it happens all the time, yeah.
Open me new screensaver.
That's right, yeah.
Who loads screensavers these days, really?
Yeah.
It's more those PowerPoint presentations these days.
Yeah, absolutely. The 20 megabyte PowerPoint presentation. Well, that's the other thing about it as well. It's like it clogs up network traffic, sending giant email files for maybe your less tech-savvy friends and send around a
that's
giant
right.
file.
Well,
do you think it's actually what's the word?
Burden,
thank you. Burden on bandwidth, there we go.
Oh, absolutely. And from talking to IT managers out there, you know, their one concern is, you know, bandwidth and storage. You know, not that that tends to be expensive, but it just becomes a real problem to manage for a large organization if, you know, half of the network is full of, you know, stuff which probably shouldn't be on the network. And it costs money to maintain those servers and, you know, bring support people in to actually do that.
And I guess that's one thing. If I keep my email for a while, and I, you know, and certainly keep archives and that sort of thing, but I don't necessarily clean out the inbox of all those weird, funny you know, flash files or PowerPoint files or anything that gets sent around, and that could be, you know, times that by 1,000 people, and you suddenly have a huge amount of data. Absolutely. Just being
that's
repeated.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, as I was looking through my large files inbox, and like the largest files I have are ridiculous joke emails. I should just delete them, really.
No, I think you should forward them on to me.
Okay, go.
Speaking of which, if you do want to forward in any funny emails that you have at home, please feel free to do so on air at joy.org.au. Well, if you send one in and we find it's funny and we haven't actually heard of it before, we'll say it out on air and attribute it to whoever the sender is. So,
or if you're listening on the podcast as well, send it to technogaze@joy.org.au.
Indeed. I think I just heard a beep just then, in fact. Is there anything else to say about...
I just had an email pop in from Alex, and it says, what about the time it takes to get back to what you were doing once you've been interrupted? And that's a very good point. And I think it's probably something which is self-managed. I don't know if you can quantify it. And I'm not sure if it'll even hold water if your employee actually came to you and said, you know, I think you're spending an extra 5 minutes getting back into the swing of things. So, I mean, it's something like that. I mean, this area is just completely subjective in a lot of ways. Apart from, you know, you can measure how many megabytes this email is storing. You know, the social impacts of that. I mean, you could be talking about an email at the water cooler for the next 3 hours while being at work. You know, and so there are all these kind of other factors which need to be considered. But no, I think it's a very good point. Thanks, Alex.
It's comparable, I guess, to those other things. So, you know, the water cooler and the, you know, standing around the the coffee machine or whatever it is that you might do otherwise.
Well, that's right. It's a social builder as well. I mean, if the whole team gets a funny email, you know, it can make it a whole lot more fun at lunchtime. Definitely. when you're sitting here, you know, talking about this email and how hilarious it was, and you know, that could be real team building material right there. So
Often when I hear a bit of laughter over the other side of the office, you're always like, oh, what was that all about, and try to get them to
absolutely
forward it on.
That's right. I'm guilty of that.
This is Technogaze on Joy 94.9. Stay tuned, because we'll have a few more...
Nuggets from the internet.
Yes, indeed. So we'll give you some YouTube clips and those sort of things to look up.
Hey, you're listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9. The song's almost finished.
It's fine, Well, we'll fade that down for a moment. Yeah, there we go.
Cool.
Yeah. So next up, we have a discussion on funny things to look for YouTube and the like.
Yep. So the shopping list for the internet. If you're a bit bored.
So you're in front of a computer right now, and you want to, you know, finding it hard to, you know, work out what to do, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Or if you're not completely entertained by us, which I find entirely unbelievable, then you can use the internet to entertain yourself as well. So the first thing that I'd like to mention are some video things. So this is on YouTube. If you haven't seen any Catherine Tate, I'd highly recommend looking that up. She does hilarious as a grandmother. I can't remember what it's called, but
Catherine Tate, she's a UK comedian.
British comedian.
She has her own show on mainstream TV.
Oh,
right.
And she's also been on Doctor Who.
Oh, really?
Yes, as one of the companions.
In character or...?
In character, yeah.
Right.
Not as Catherine Tate, but as a character.
Right.
Yeah, yes. That's what I mean by in character. Yeah, she's hilarious, and she's got lots of stuff. The other thing is the phone jacker. So this is this guy, another British comedian. Actually, they're all British comedians. But and the guy who does prank calls to people. And he just does all these ridiculous, silly voices. Like, this is one guy, he's kind of like buying... he wants to buy a DVD player, and he's like, yes, I would like a DVD player. one DVD could look at a TV, and a DVD player... But yeah, you have to watch it, because they kind of put animations to the videos as well.
Right.
So you actually see pictures of the people, or sometimes they actually take a hidden camera in and film the people answering the phone.
So it's like, I guess, the Web 2.0 version of a radio prank call or something, but with
more. Definitely. You should definitely look at the Doovda one, and if you're on there as well, there's another one, the art one, what's it called? Brian Batonte.
I think it's called the Art Buyer, the Art Dealer or something.
Art Dealer, yeah. Look at that one. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay, what else have we got? Little Britain. If you haven't seen any of the shows, there's lots of really good Little Britain clips on.
Well, if you haven't seen any of Little Britain, then you're living under the rock, perhaps. But
you're in for a treat.
Yes, it's great.
Yeah, definitely. Bubbles de Vere was my favourite. Call me Bubbles Darling, everybody does. Okay, so that's YouTube. The other sites that I'd probably recommend having a look at, which we didn't cover earlier on in the segment, Failblog.
It's one of my personal favourites.
Yeah.
I spend hours on that one.
It's similar to Lolcats, isn't it? The Arcane has cheeseburger.
I believe the site's been run by the same place, so they do a number of different ones, including another one called Photobomb, which has pictures of people where someone else has kind of jumped in and made the picture really funny. So, you know, it might be someone in the background with, like, no shirt on or something like that.
Someone throwing up in the background, of a wedding photo.
Yeah. Oh, delightful.
Yeah. Or, you know, someone just wearing outrageous clothes for no particular reason. There's Photobomb, Failblog, which has pictures of things that are just fail. That's where epic fail and fail comes from, if you've heard people talking about it. Yeah.
It's funny how language kind of picks up on that, doesn't it? Isn't it? People actually start using the language that... you see up on these websites.
I think this is an example of where an internet meme has turned into a normal social meme because people say fail all the time now.
Mm. Yeah,
yeah,
it's quite a common language. Yeah,
yeah. So what else have we got? Photobomb, Failblog, other ones I look at. The Photoshop disasters is quite good as well. It's where people put up. On the internet or in advertising, people see things that are, you know, strangely warped via Photoshop. Where people don't have a lot of Photoshop skill have come in and you know, had a go, essentially. Yes.
And they've got examples from mainstream media too, don't they? Magazine covers, you know, someone's got a third leg or, you know, a sixth finger or something like that.
One thing I've noticed is a lot of them are kind of like Playboy covers and stuff like that as well. Mm. Like things that have actually gone into print and you know, someone hasn't actually picked up on how badly they're made. But I suppose if you're a purchaser of Playboy magazine, you don't really care about how the entire composition of the shot's been made. It's just kind of...
No, that's right, no.
Yeah, how it's done.
No, you're not exactly reading it for the articles either, I'd assume.
No, no. what else have we got? Another one that I like to look at by the same people is called Pundit Kitchen, which is kind of more based in the American... it's kind of like political images with funny captions, but kind of in the motivational poster style. So motivational posters is something that's become a bit of an internet meme as well. It's where, you know, the common picture is like a black background with, like, some, you know, bold text along the bottom. And then an image in the middle. You know, you would have seen them in the past with, like, you know, someone rowing a boat and saying, you know, perseverance, rah, 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 rah. But it's been changed into funny stuff, so yeah, that's quite a good one.
Excellent. Well, I think that's probably enough to keep you entertained, at least for an hour anyway.
Yeah. Well, sure, we'll put all of those things on the blog and on the Twitter feed as well.
So the blog is technogaze.blogspot.com. You can always email us if you want to send in a funny joke or something like that, technogaze@joy.org.au. This is a podcast edition of Technogaze on Joy 94.9. In Melbourne, you can tune in on Monday nights, 7 p.m. on 94.9 FM or online at joy.org.au/listen-live. For more information, visit joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.